If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Sunday Take for April.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a brand new show. It's called Money Moves. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
27th, 2025. I'm your host, Blaise Olson. And it was another week of not a lot of progress at the Minnesota legislature. But we had the State of the State from Governor Walz, which will be the subject of this week's take. And on the newsletter front, we're celebrating 15 years this week. And I want to thank our listeners and our readers, all of you who have followed along as this journey of a newsletter that went out to less than 100 people now has about 500,000 readers per month. And I want to thank all of you for that. It's been fun to reflect and think about and remember the journey we've been on. And my guest this week is Tom Hauser. He's going to go back because he and I have known each other that long and longer. And he was one of the first people I said that it was no longer about being partisan, but rather calling it like we see it and seeing where the state went. That was 2010. It's now 2025. You think about the fact that Tim Pawlenty was governor. Mark Dayton and Tom Emmer had just faced off and were facing off in the governor's race. Then you move to the Tim Walz era and Al Franken, the Franken recount, the second Franken term, then Senator Tina Smith taking over for him after being lieutenant governor, and the shift due to Trump and the MAGA movement in Minnesota's politics. The decline of media and the decline of civility. Someone wrote this week, Shannon Watson said, you know, the decline of civility and we're losing our civil minds was one of the more pointed pieces I wrote in the last 15 years. And unfortunately, nothing's changed since I wrote that in 2020. And yet here we are in the legislature with a tie and a national and local political scene that remains and feels tense on most given days. Tom Hauser is going to join me in a little bit, and we're going to reflect on those 15 years. I'll talk about the take and the state of the state and Governor Walz's speech. But if you have thoughts this week, please email them to bloisolson@gmail.com. That's B-L-O-I-S, Olson, O-L-S-O-N, at gmail.com. Because we'll continue to think about the last 15 years and the next 15 years as we get geared up for what is going to be a lively 2026 election. Before we take the break, here's a message from Minnesota Hospitals. Did you know that in one way or another, Medicaid supports all of us in Minnesota? It's the largest source of federal funding that Minnesota hospitals rely on to keep their doors open. This critical program faces unprecedented threats and would strip healthcare from vulnerable Minnesotans. It would devastate our healthcare system and shift massive cost to the state versus the federal government. It's time to protect Medicaid's promise of healthcare access for all Minnesotans, regardless of income, age, or health status. You can learn more at protectmnpatients.org. Again, that's protectmnpatients.org, a message from Minnesota's hospitals. When we come back, KSTP chief political reporter, my colleague at WCCO Radio and friend, Tom Hauser, on the 15-year look back in Minnesota politics and what he thinks may change over the next couple of years. I'm Blaise Olson. You're listening to News Talk 830 WCCO. Joining me this Sunday take is Tom Hauser, KSTP chief political reporter, my colleague here as he substitutes at WCCO Radio and a longtime friend. We won't count the years, but I wanted to have Tom on this week as we reflect back on 15 years of Morning Take, and because so much has changed in the last 15 years. Tom still does the At Issue show, and it was one a week after the 2010 election where he texted me and said, can you do At Issue this week? And I said, I think I'm done being a partisan analyst. I'm just going to call it like I see it. And we talked on the phone, and it's not the first time or the last time that one of us said to the other one, oh, really? And I think that's healthy in both a friendship and a professional relationship. So, Tom, thanks for joining me. And I really appreciate our friendship and our professional note sharing over the years.
Yeah, it has been fascinating to compare notes over the years and how things have changed pretty dramatically since I started covering the Capitol in 1997. You know, it is night and day, the just the climate and the atmosphere at the state capitol in particular, but in the broader campaign atmosphere as well.
Well, and we launched our first newsletter in 98, so that's where this syncs up pretty well as we've watched back. But I want to go back to, I want to just start at 2010, because the 2010 governor's race was, as I think, kind of the biggest kicking point of kind of the modern drama of statewide elections. And we both knew the two candidates, Tom Emmer and Mark Dayton, really well. And both of them came with a certain profile, a certain personality, certain emotions. You knew Tom Emmer very well. I did as well. I knew Mark Dayton probably as long as you'd known Tom Emmer. And it ended in this, you know, very close recount, 9,000 votes. Tom Horner was a third party candidate, but it was a lively, spirited, but both Dayton and Emmer, despite going after each other, they had this hockey bond. And I think it was kind of the last race in Minnesota where two well-established candidates ran for governor and you really didn't know who was going to win on election night.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about that race is that, you know, Emmer had served in the state legislature. And I think before that, wasn't he on the Delano City Council?
Yeah.
Anyway, in the interest of full disclosure, I played youth hockey and baseball with Tom Emmer. I've known him like literally forever. And it was remarkable to see, you know, he was up against the Dayton name. And yeah. The Dayton brand. Emmer didn't have that. He had started to make a name for himself in the legislature with some very conservative legislation. You may remember the chemical castration bill that he authored that got a lot of attention. He did a lot of things. He was a great orator on the House floor and began to make a name for himself that way, which was far different than how the Dayton brand started, which was as a department store and just the famous Dayton family. So Emmer was more a, you know, kind of a self-made candidate. And so you have these two colliding, and Emmer was as conservative as Dayton. Well, at least at the time we thought Dayton was that far to the left, but now that we see how far left things have gone, Dayton was probably more of a moderate than we would think of now. But that race was fascinating, and a lot of people forget it went to a recount. I mean, that's how close it was.
And I think of, as we just think of the access and the events from the Old Mexico tip credit town hall to, you know, Mark Dayton crashing the DFL convention, being thrown out. campaigns in Minnesota used to have these ad libs or these variables that you couldn't anticipate what was going to happen. And as candidates have just become more programmed and more careful, that race just sticks in my head as a real down-to-earth battle for the governorship. And as I write in a new column, Wisconsin went to a Republican trifecta, and it changed the course of their state. And Dayton winning that race and Republicans not winning statewide or having a race as close as that since changed the shape of the Minnesota GOP for years to come, too. And that's where I look at it as that pivot point. What else do you think pivoted after 2010?
Well, remember, 2010 was when smartphones and social media were kind of in their infancy. Mm-hmm. I remember a former colleague of mine, I'm sure you'll remember him, Mark Albert.
Of course.
In our newsroom, he's gone on to do some work for CBS, and I forget who he's with now. But I remember one day he's in the newsroom with this, I can't remember if it was an iPhone. I think it was an iPhone. And I go, what the hell is an iPhone? And it was, what is a smartphone? And I mean, because, you know, they were brand new. They were just coming on the market. And he was the first guy I knew in our newsroom. I still had my flip phone and, you know, I could text and make phone calls. You know, here he's got a computer in his hand. Yeah. Well, it was around that same time. You know, it's funny when you connect with people on Facebook and you look and see when they joined Facebook. And many of them, it was 2007, 2008, 2009. Same thing with Twitter. You know, a lot of these things were happening. People didn't really know how to use them. People hadn't really started using them. And we can get into this later as anonymous hacks on Twitter, which I think has become the scourge of politics, to be honest with you. But that was one thing that I think was a pivot point in that election. You all of a sudden started having people being able to give you their opinion via social media. And going back to, like, I remember when Governor Ventura was running in 1998, and they thought it was revolutionary that he was starting a website. I mean, that's how quickly things have progressed. We went from, boy, isn't this cool? He's got a website and he has an internet-based campaign. And then all of a sudden, it's social media, and anybody with a phone and an opinion can use the two of those to let you know what they think.
The speed at which things changed and the speed at which people could opine or engage. Because I remember in 2008 when I joined Twitter during the Republican National Convention, that it was all on my desktop and I still had to follow the messages through the desktop. And yet you could get texts with your tweets. But oh my gosh, could you imagine if you got a text message every time there was a tweet these days? You and I would probably be retired and not mentally healthy at all. So, Tom, before we get to the break, just talk about what you see in candidates and parties and how it's evolved from that Dayton-Emmer race, because we've had a ton of statewide candidates. But, you know, again, Republicans have not been successful statewide. And part of it's been candidate quality, but part of it's been this very strong, well-funded machine the DFL has built.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, they can control their own message more than they ever could before. And I think one of the biggest changes we've seen really since 2010 is the lack of willingness of candidates to engage in debates and even interviews. I've had a couple of interviews that I had lined up with Governor Walz in recent weeks, and at the last minute, they have both been canceled. This is not unusual. It has happened with members of Congress. As you know, trying to get people to engage in a debate has become incredibly difficult. It used to just be a staple of campaigns, these statewide televised debates. And, you know, Channel 5 has kind of led the way in that, because the Hubbards have believed very firmly in, we're going to give this airtime to all of these races, all of the candidates equally, you know, without favor to one or the other. And in recent years, it has been difficult to get people to agree to participate because they go, well, what's the benefit? We're going to control our own message through our social media echo chamber and just drive our base. If we drag along a couple of independents along the way, fine, but we're after our base, and they don't feel like they need to engage with the masses. And I think that is kind of an insult to democracy.
Well, I couldn't agree more, because it was 2014 that CCO Radio asked me to restart debates on the radio. And between 2014 and 2020, we had a strong list of debates, and people would engage. And in 2022, it changed a little, but we got most of the constitutional officers to agree to it. But in 2024, and I want to go to your candidate interviews with Royce White. But we had the only debate between Amy Klobuchar and Royce White. And, Klobuchar doesn't need to debate Royce White, because she's probably going to win, and Royce White wants to debate her everywhere. But it's not just the fact of debating. It's the tone and the tenor and the words of the debates that, it's almost like WWE wrestling on one part, or a car accident people don't want to turn away from. But it's also not exactly engaging to the public. And before we take the break, just talk about, you mentioned not getting interviews with Governor Walz, or they get canceled at the last minute. But you've had some of the most fascinating interviews and dynamics and tense interviews with Royce White, who's going to be a candidate again next year.
Yeah, and I give Royce White credit for his willingness to sit down and talk to me, for better or for worse. I give any candidate credit who was willing to debate or do interviews. You mentioned Amy Klobuchar. You're right. She didn't need to debate. She was going to win that race. We all knew that. But she did the courtesy to her opponent to engage in at least a debate. Another one who is always willing to debate is Keith Ellison. I give those candidates credit. It doesn't matter whether I agree with their positions on anything, because nobody cares what I think. But I am always impressed by any candidate who is willing to go debate their opponent. I mean, that's what democracy is all about. And, Royce White, the couple of times I've had to interview him, it was about his campaign finance, shall we call them irregularities, whether it involves money spent at strip clubs on food, he says, or car services, or $1 million in credit card fees, all of these things. He at least is willing to come in and talk. He insists. And here's the other interesting thing that it couldn't have happened 20 years ago. He will record the entire interview himself. He'll ask, do you mind if I set my phone up? And I go, no, we got nothing to hide here. You do what you want. Yeah. And so it's fascinating, because then he likes to use that as a gotcha moment, and he'll air the whole thing. I don't know who's sitting through the whole thing, but that's what he does. But we are in a very fascinating media dynamic right now, largely driven by social media and people trying to control their own candidate messages.
Tom Hauser's my guest. When we come back, what does that mean for the rest of this year and next year? What is the change in media in Minnesota meant to coverage? And how or what should listeners want and need to know about the way Tom thinks about covering the Capitol? I'm Blaise Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. We're back on Sunday Take. My guest is Tom Hauser. We were talking about how social media has changed things over the last 15 years, how candidates will record the full interview, who's watching it. Tom, I think one of the biggest pieces is not only do they control their narrative and push it out to their own echo chamber, but the public's interest, or the fringe on both the left and the right's inability to even answer a question or acknowledge facts that may be different than reality, begin to kind of put this haze over all things that we cover or that we talk about or that we analyze, because it's one thing to dig into it. It's what I think about is, how is the public receiving these interviews? What do you see on your interviews? Where do you get good feedback that you can trust? And where do you get feedback that you just scoff at?
Well, I can handle the feedback I scoff at immediately by talking to any of the anonymous hacks on X who will, you know, write in with just some of the craziest stuff. And I mean, the moment somebody refers to Governor Walz as Tampon Tim, I just completely disregard anything they say after that, because it is the height of immaturity. It is so lacking in any intellectual basis that I can't help myself when somebody refers to him as Tampon Tim. All you can do is shake your head. And that's just one right. example. I had a guy who wrote in, I'll never watch Channel 5 again because of that hit piece you did on Royce White. The hit piece he was referring to was the story I did where I think Royce raised and spent $1.3 million on his Senate campaign, and $1 million of it was listed as credit card fees. And I go, that's not a hit piece. That is a fact piece. You don't like it because you don't like Amy Klobuchar and you wanted Royce White to win. That's not my problem. I'm just reporting facts. And, you know, when people see facts that they don't like, then they assume it's your opinion and therefore they hate you and the media outlet that you represent. And I don't even know how to wrap my head around that. But in 98% of these cases, these are people who are anonymous on X yep. or some other social media platform, and they can say whatever they want without any potential blowback to them because, you know, they're listed as dog meat 123 on X. I mean, who yeah. is that?
Right.
I mean, they are dog meat, but still, I have no idea who this person is. There's no accountability. You and I put our names on what we put out there, and that is the big difference. And they just do not understand that.
You know, that just gives me the flashback to, you know, 2006, 2005, when there were anonymous bloggers. And so this anonymity in politics has been there. Obviously, I have a rich tradition, we'll call it, when Michael Broadcorp was an anonymous blogger. And I had found that he wrote something about me that I thought was defamation. It turned out the court disagreed and called me a public person. But this the anonymity has just grown, and you don't know who these folks are. You and I put our names on everything. As you think about what, you know, you broadcast to, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people a year. When you're thinking about a story today and how to explain a story or drive a point across that you think the public's interested in, do you frame it differently than you did 10 or 15 years ago? Do you think about it differently, and how so?
You know, I really don't frame anything differently. You know, I studied journalism and political science at the University of St. Thomas under the late, great Father James Whalen. And he would always just tell me, Hauser, people don't care what you think. You just report the news, you report the facts, and let people decide what they think. And that is how I've always approached this in now more than 40 years in television. And people don't care what I think. I have no agenda. I just go out and get both sides, or in some cases, there can be three sides to a story, maybe even more. You try to represent as many of those as you can. You report it and you let people decide. You know, it's the old, was it Fox News that had "We report, you decide," or was yeah. that no, was that or is that the Comedy Central? It's all I've gotten it all mixed up. Now.
It all meshes together, Tom.
But you know, it's, and obviously Fox and CNN and MSNBC have all gone. They've all chosen sides and they run with it. I never choose sides, regardless of, you know, and I get criticized from both the right and the left. So that's how I always know that I'm pretty much on the right track. I'm not going to deviate from that in however many years I have left in this business. But I don't really frame anything in any certain way. But I do know when I write a story, I will always look it over and I go, which one of these things is going to set people off? You know, I do try to predict it. And sometimes you just do not see it coming. You just don't see it coming. And you go, man, I thought that was pretty innocuous. I can't believe that has triggered people. But, you know, that's the way it is.
I think you use a good word there, triggered, because let's like zoom in on the Capitol and the legislature and in a session that is unlike any we've seen before and lived through, and the dynamics. I say that for 2 hours and 15 minutes, the Minnesota legislature had a full roster between Senator Doran Clark being, or I'm sorry, the new representative from Roseville being sworn in, and the senator being arrested this session. So it's just been topsy-turvy. But besides scandal, look at what you've learned about legislators, how legislators have changed, how covering the Capitol and the process has changed, because it just it feels more and more as though, for all the committee hearings and all the press conferences, that at the end of the day, it's a back room with leaders that figures out all the things that actually matter to Minnesotans.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when they would do conference committees out in the open, and Tom Bach would show up on a Saturday morning in a hoodie and look across at his Republican counterpart, and they would go through all these tax issues and try to sort them out. And we could have our cameras right there, and we could see how they were arriving at these decisions. Now we don't know how these decisions are made, because, as you said, they're happening behind closed doors. And then when they get to the debate on the floor, the fix is usually pretty much in. You know how they're going to caucus everything, and you know how it's going to go. And one of the biggest changes I've seen, you probably recall, for a number of years, I used to do a segment called The Capitol Greatest Hits. And at the end of every session, mm-hmm. we would play these outtakes of funny moments in debates, and then we'd sync them up with movie clips or music and whatever, and just have some fun with it, just to kind of lighten the mood a little bit. But we used to have such great characters, you know, guys like Tom Rukavina, you know, a Democratic representative from up north, and Dick Day, Senator Dick Day, the minority. Yeah. I mean, and then you'd have Rukavina and Governor Pawlenty or Swigum, the former House Speaker, all going at it, but in a friendly but pointed way on the House floor. And you just never have moments like that anymore. Everybody is so mean-spirited. Everybody is out to get the other guy. And you never get the idea after a debate on the floor that these guys are going to go have a beer together somewhere. It's like they're going to go to their respective corners, and they may not talk to each other again until the next floor session. And I think that's what has changed a lot. The collegiality of the legislature has changed, I think, pretty dramatically in my 25, 26, whatever number of years it is there.
Well, and I think part of that I've observed, my guest is Tom Hauser, chief political reporter at KSTP and guest host here at CCO Radio. We're reflecting on kind of how things have changed in the last 15 years since Morning Take started. But Tom, one of the things that I see, and we see it in social, and we see it on campaigns, and we see it during the session, is that the legislators all hang out together. Now, we can debate about town halls and who goes to them or not, but even door knocks, even during campaign season, they're at each other's fundraisers. It is odd to me how they're just so insulated on both sides. And you bring up the mean-spirited and nature and the edgy kind of personalities that are there that seem to lack humor. But, you know, one of those is we've had so much turnover in the legislature. I think the fact is in the last 6 years, we've lost 200 years of institutional knowledge in the Minnesota legislature on both sides of the aisle. And that more activist driven from the fringes of the right and the left are electing their activists, which then they don't bring maybe their professional experience, or they don't bring, you know, a more kind of thoughtful policy view, but rather an activism view to the Capitol. And that shows up in those debates. It shows up in the personality. And it certainly shows up in the legislation.
And they're often being driven by what their base is telling them on social media. And I keep getting back to the social media aspect, because I don't think that can be dismissed at all as fundamentally changing the nature of the way politics is conducted today. It's just, they know when they do some viral moment on the House or Senate floor, they know it. They're going to tweet it themselves. They're going to, you know, blast it out there themselves. and they're going to get their base all ginned up about something. And then inevitably, ultimately, it's going to blow back to the media and they're going to blame us for whatever ends up being the result. It's just the blame the media crowd is as, you know, the so-called mainstream media, the legacy media, like we're some kind of an evil empire. I just laugh at that. I don't understand it. Most of the people I know in the mainstream media are just out to report the facts without an agenda. And the people who have the agenda are the people who are criticizing us, claiming we have one, because they're coming from the right and the left, and they just don't like objectivity. They're just opposed to it because they've got their viewpoint, and that's the only one that matters.
It does. Tom, as we get ready to look at next year, we'll have an open Senate seat. We don't know what's going to happen in the governor's race. What do you see as the things that you think in a Trump midterm with potentially an open governor's race, an open Senate seat, in a state that's as divided between rural and urban and suburban as it's ever been? You are familiar with the western suburbs, and they've changed, shifted dramatically since Donald Trump came on the scene. What do you start to think about what you're watching for next year and in the mood of Minnesota, considering this last week we had the state of the state and Governor Walz said the state is as strong as it's ever been, which is going to be the subject of my take after I let you go here. But what do you think the mood of the state is, and where do you see things to watch next year?
Well, we're going to be watching what happens with Donald Trump's tariffs and everything else. I mean, every 10 minutes, there is some lawsuit he's filing or having filed against him. The tariff policies are on, they're off, they're back on again. They're at this level, they're at that level. The stock market is like a Duncan yo-yo, and you just don't know what is going to happen next. But I'll tell you, James Carville, I believe, wasn't he the economy stupid?
Yep, he was, 1992.
Yep, he and Bill Clinton, that holds as true today as it ever has. People might like Donald Trump for what he's doing to crack down on immigration. They think that's great. His base is solidly behind him. But you look at polling now, and these same people are also looking at their retirement accounts or their investments or interest rates or whatever. And they're very concerned, and rightfully so. So we don't know yet. It's too early to say what impact all of this might have on the midterm elections, you know, what, 18 months from now or whatever it is. But it's a lot of it is going to have to do with, does he settle down on this tariff thing and the economy? Does the stock market come roaring back? Does inflation actually start to go down? I'm going to be watching very closely. I think it's May 13th is the next inflation report coming down. That's going to be really interesting to see what happens. Has there been an impact yet of these tariffs? Because that will be for the month of April. Sometimes it might be a couple month lag before we truly know the impact. But those are the types of things we're going to have to look at going into the midterms. What is the state of the economy? What is the state of the personal finances of voters?
Tom, thanks so much for doing this. I know we'll talk soon and appreciate it very much.
Congratulations on 15 years. That's awesome.
Thanks, Tom. When we come back, this week's take. Welcome back to Sunday Take. This week's take is really about what Governor Tim Walz said during the State of the State, that Minnesota is as strong as it's ever been. I posed that question to readers. I posed it out to the world. And there's a disagreement in Minnesota. Are we as strong? I think there's a twist on that. I think Minnesota is as tough as it's ever been, maybe not as strong. The politics are tougher. The economy's tougher. Education is tougher. Things are just more challenging than they have traditionally been in Minnesota. We've seen some recent good news with crime rates in Minneapolis, in St. Paul. And if that can continue through the summer to maintain back to pre-pandemic levels of crime, that's a huge move in the right direction for our state. But we still need outside investment. We still need capital to come in on housing and real estate. And our regulatory environment is still more challenging than our neighboring states. Our tax environment is what it is. But are we getting the quality of government we want? Governor Walz's first big applause line in a bipartisan way was fraud and fixing fraud, waste, and abuse in state government. That was interesting since fraud had not occurred in either of his previous state of the state addresses. And as I've said before, he seems late to that. And a government you can trust and believe in is ultimately going to be better than a government that most of the state is skeptical of. It's easy to tear down government, and I don't want to become one of those folks. But the reality is that the tension between Governor Walz and public employee unions, the upcoming labor shortage that we're in the middle of but is only going to get worse, will make the need to automate state government better. The expansion of tabs is something that I've praised, that I can go to Cub Foods and get my license tabs. Governor Walz has been slow to invest there, and that's one thing about state government employees and external factors, but it's time to be more bullish. And so my take this week is, let's be bullish on making the state stronger in all categories, in education quality, in economics. Stronger by growing jobs and growing population. We don't have many more years before workforce decline is going to impact our economy in Minnesota greatly. And the unknowns of AI and robotics maybe put Minnesota at even a more disadvantage if manufacturing surges back. But if the state's as strong as it's ever been, it wouldn't be as divided as it ever has been. And so my take this week is, strength will come in unity. And while unity can't be universal, the moderates, the middle, want to see more unity and less fringe politics. And that would make us stronger. I'm Blaise Olson. Thanks for listening. I'll be with Vanita Monday through Thursday at 6:20. You can subscribe to any of our newsletters at The Daily Agenda.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
.com. I'm sure Corzo is going to break down the Vikings draft and have a great Sunday.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
What if the thing you're listening to right now never got interrupted? What if it could play uninterrupted from room to room on Sonos? What if you start with two Sonos speakers just to see how it feels? What if you really like how it feels and you become a Sonos person who can't stop saying to their friends, what if you start with two Sonos speakers just to see how it feels? Because it's not magic, but it's not not magic.